This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. And our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. We're going to chat with our good friend and Detroit columnist, Terry Foster, and talk about this NC2A tournament and things that are going on. So let's bring in our guest, Terry Foster. Terry, how you doing, buddy?
Pretty good there, Earl. How's everything in beautiful East Lansing?
Well, beautiful, except for my brackets obviously aren't too beautiful. I only have one of the Final Four right.
Jeez, what do I have? I know I got one. I don't even know beyond that. I stopped looking after the second weekend.
Yeah, that's. I stopped looking. I just went back and looked at it this morning and said, "Geez, I thought I had two, and then I found out I was incorrect. I'm down to one now."
Well, it's been rough for everybody. But yeah. I just saw this story that it was the 0.35%. of people who entered a particular bracket have the whole Final Four. So if you got it, you're in a very, very stark minority.
Yeah, that's being really extremely lucky.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know I got Kentucky. That's it.
Me too. That's the only one I got.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of us, and people used to denigrate me and say, well, that's going out on a limb picking Kentucky. Yeah, I say, well, who else are you going to pick? If you're going to pick, you want us to pick some that, teams you think are going to win it all. And that's when I thought that from the beginning. I still think they're going to win the whole thing, even though Louisville might wipe that out.
Well, yeah, someone's, you picked Kentucky. Oh, my goodness. And then I'm thinking, well, if I didn't, I wouldn't have anybody in it.
That's right.
Oh, man, I did.
Exactly.
Right.
Oh, shoot. So when you look at this Kentucky-Louisville matchup, you think that's a little bit tougher to pick, isn't it? I'm still picking Kentucky, but, boy, Louisville and that hostility they have for each other, that could change that a little bit, couldn't it?
Well, I think now you get all the guys who know each other, the fans in one spot, and they absolutely hate each other. I've never been to a Louisville-Kentucky basketball game, but I have been to a Louisville game, basketball and football, and I know they're pretty passionate fans down there. And we spent a weekend in Kentucky, of all places, last spring, because my daughter Celine had a soccer tournament down there. And the thing that you understand how important basketball is there, college basketball. I never get the sense here in Michigan, despite what Michigan State has done, the college basketball is that important here. But I've been to North Carolina, I've been to Indiana, and I've been to Kentucky. And in those three spots, it really hits you that college basketball is great and it's wonderful and it means a lot. And Earl, let me tell you this. I've been to Pauley Pavilion. Of course, it was way after John Wooden. I never got that sense down there. And maybe that's because the basketball team has just become, so-so and everything. Mm-hmm. But North Carolina, Kentucky, and Indiana, it really hits you how important college basketball is.
Yes, I know when I was at the Final Four, or actually, I think it was this Sweet Eight or out there. I think we were both there. It was in St. Louis when Kentucky was there. And, boy, that impressed me. All the people that showed up, that was that first they started moving to the larger arenas, and they had such a huge crowd there, and that impressed me very much how the people in Kentucky were so much into the basketball as well.
Well, first of all, we were both there, mm-hmm. and I'm going to spare you, Earl, by not telling the audience what you were doing at nights during that tournament. But no, you didn't. And plus, St. Louis, Kentucky's not that far away. I mean, yeah. They're willing to drive there, and so. But you know what? It could have been Seattle, it could have been Houston, or wherever. There's going to be a lot of the Kentucky people there, and we we went to a mall when we went down to the soccer tournament. In one mall, there were six different places. And this doesn't include the department stores. This doesn't include Dick's. This doesn't include the big boys. There were six places for you to get Kentucky gear in one mall.
Wow. That's impressive. Yeah. Yes. Well, we got a caller for you. Our buddy from Saginaw with us. Michael is on the line. Michael, how you doing?
Okay. How you doing there, Earl? Hey, Terry, what if you was Trey Ziegler at Central Michigan? Where would you go to college? Where would you transfer to?
Well, if it were me, look, here's where I think he's going to go. I think he's going to go to UDM down here to Detroit. Mm-hmm. That's what I think he's going, where I think he's going to go. I've heard some people say, well, maybe he might go to Michigan State. I know he took a trip to Duke. I don't think he is that caliber of player. Okay. Now, could he play for Michigan State? Yes. But I don't think it would be a major role. I think he should go to a mid-major and try to make a play there.
Okay. I got to ask you, what is Antoine Joubert doing coaching college basketball, man?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Antoine Joubert used to play at Southwestern. He coaches at Brooklyn Community College now?
Yeah, I know he's coaching. I think he is down there.
Okay, let me ask you, on the state of the – before I let you get to other people, what is the state of the mid-majors in Michigan now, Oakland and Detroit, since Detroit finally got to the NCAA tournament? You think now that players like Doug Anderson – will pick up their skill level, and how the UDM program, you think they're going to be able to compete in their Horizon League?
I think UDM is going to be good for the next 2 years, at least with McCallum there. Also, Juwan Howard's son supposedly can play. UDM should have the best backcourt in the Horizon next season, so they're going to be in it. As far as Oakland University, you know, I think Oakland University took a little step back this year, which everybody's going to do because they got on to a little bit of a roll. But Greg Campy is getting talent, very good talent that he wasn't getting before. So I think Oakland is going to be good, too. I'm not sure they're going to be dominant like they were before because, you know, they had the big fella in the middle. But I think Oakland University is going to be very, very good.
Okay, let me sneak in this question. Whatever happened to Dan Brownfield that played at Central and played in the NBA? Because I thought about it. He was a walk-on on Central, and he made it all the way to the NBA. Do you hear any more stories about that in today's sports world? I just take it off the air and let you comment on it. Thanks.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about Dan Brownfield in many, many years. So I have no idea. Maybe somebody knows. They can call you there, Earl.
Yes. Give us a call. Let us know what Dan's up to.
Yeah.
Yes. He was a good player. And, you know, we don't hear that much today about guys. You know, there's so much information about guys that, you know, they get to college and then they go on. And many of them are on scholarship. You got a few that walk on, but you don't hear any, I don't think today, Terry, of guys who walk on in school and make it all the way up to the NBA, do you?
No, because everybody knows who each other is. We got the scouting services in addition to the coaches. You know, we've got everything on the internet. We've got YouTube. You know, you could be a scout from your basement.
Yeah,
you really
that's
could.
True.
and maybe be just as reliable as some of these other scouting services because they rely on film, they rely on interviews, they rely on a lot of things. So it's kind of hard for somebody to slip through the cracks.
It is, that's for sure. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. We're talking with Terry Foster from the Detroit News, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-952-7870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, you know, spring football is here, so another football season is upon us already, Terry, and I don't know what you're thinking about. I'm looking at least Michigan State saying, well, we know all the obvious things. They got to get the quarterback is basically situated. He's just got to get playing time, and they got to sort out who's going to be their receivers. But what do you look at when you look at spring football? You know, just every team's got a few holes, and I guess we all have to look at see how they're being filled.
Yeah, you know, I think I look at spring football different than other people. I guess I'm looking for individuals. I mean, it was during spring football that way. I'm going to go way back in the day on you, Earl, mm-hmm. but that we discovered Plaxico Burress.
Yes.
And that, you know, you discovered a Kirk Cousins, or you discovered guys that maybe you'd heard about, but, you know, you didn't know what they were going to be. And in spring football, this is where the individuals come through. So it's hard for me to you know, say the team's going to be good or bad based on spring football, but I will say this. I think Maxwell is the guy that I really want to look at. I think he's a good quarterback. And down here in Detroit, you know, already getting that, you know, hey, you Sparties up there, you had your run, you're done, Kirk Cousins is done, and so are you. Well, first of all, Michigan State's defense, I expect. Are you talking about expectations? I think their defense is going to be excellent next season. I think their running game is going to be improved. Their offensive line is going to be better. And you know what? Maxwell may not have to throw the ball that much. But I get a sneaking suspicion that once he gets the cobwebs out, which everybody has to do, I think Maxwell is going to be a very good quarterback. I think he's going to do it differently than Kirk Cousins. Obviously, they're two different people, but I don't think Michigan State's going to go away. And that's what we're accustomed to here. Okay, Michigan State, you had your fun. You had your 1 or 2 years of fun. So now you disappear for a while. And we'll see in 5 years. I don't think that's going to happen now. I think Mark D'Antoni has built a program, and he hasn't built, like, a good team that comes up. That, you know, it's okay as sophomores and, you know, pretty good as juniors, and then they kind of explode as senior, and then they all disappear. I think what he is doing is he's building a program, and so Michigan State is just not going to disappear.
Yeah, I believe that as well. I think that he's built a very strong foundation. You know, he redshirted all those guys in his first couple of years, and now they have a good base of players, and then, you know, they haven't had to recruit massive players to fill in holes like a lot of schools do.
Right. I think, you know, expectations for Michigan State the next 2 years, compete for the Big Ten title. I don't think they can compete with the elite teams of the country. You know, it's Alabama or whomever's going to be like a top five team. I don't think they can compete with them, but they very well should be able to compete in the Big Ten. And, you know, who knows? They might be in the Big Ten championship game this year or next year. You know, wouldn't surprise me at all.
Okay, we got another caller for you, Todd from Lake Orion. Todd, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. I got a couple quick ones, and I'll get out of your way. Terry, what do you think about, and I'm greatly impressed, Michigan State fan, about what Michigan State is doing with their schedule, kind of being the first school to say, okay, Boise State, we'll accept the challenge, we'll take one at our place, we'll take one at your place, when that's been on the table for a long time and nobody seemed willing to pick up that gauntlet, bringing in an Oregon and Alabama, the kind of going against the trend where a lot of schools are fluffing up their schedules. But, you know, Michigan State's still going to have some easy ones, I'm not denying that. But I like the trend of Michigan State and their scheduling. And then finally, I understand he's not going to get the press that a Denard Robinson and the Monty Balls is, but I'm going to go on record, and a lot of it has to do with the last game they played when they played Georgia. I think William Golson's the best football player in the Big Ten. I know Denard and these other guys are offensive players. They're going to have a lot more highlights. But I'm telling you what, do you agree with me? If right now the NFL could pick one kid out of the Big Ten, and that they're drooling over, I think William Golston this year makes a statement as maybe the best defensive player in the Big Ten, and I think he's going to be an All-American. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Best player in the Big Ten? We could debate that. Mm-hmm. Best defensive player in the Big Ten? Okay, I agree with you on that one. I think Golston is a monster. I really do. And I like him, too. And I know he had the issue with Michigan and everything. Earl, I've talked to him a few times. I even played basketball with the guy when he was in high school. And I just said, you know what? I kind of like him. I kind of root for a guy like this. But I tell you what, don't want to line up against him on a football field.
That's for sure. Yes.
I think he is going to explain. Now, what he's got to do is he's got to keep his emotions in check. And you know what? Even if Michigan State is going to have a very good team next year, there's going to be times where it's going to be, you know, tough, and somebody's going to do stuff to you. He's got to keep his focus now, because he's not just a good football player. Now, he's the guy we're going to be looking at as a leader, as a elite football player. So now he's got to he's got to chill out a little bit. So he's got to look at that aspect from it. But I really like the guy, and I think we're going to be talking a lot about Golston. What was the other thing that
Let me see. The other thing. Let me see. That slipped my mind as well.
Because I know he had mentioned Denard Robinson.
Oh, Boise State.
You know what? Mm-hmm. If I could, I would stand up and applaud Michigan State for doing that. Because as a journalist and as a college football fan, September bores me. I don't want to see Michigan State and Florida Atlantic and Florida International. Even if you're going to sit up there and lie and tell me they're good teams, I don't know who they are, and I really don't care. When I heard that Michigan State was going to play Boise State home and home, I was excited. They're going to play Alabama. I was excited. I just think that I understand you want to get your team together and you want to play some cupcakes, but you know what? If I'm spending money to see, you know, three bad teams at Notre Dame for the preseason or whatever, two bad teams, I'm not happy about that. So I'm glad that we, you know, there's some meat to the schedule.
Yeah, I am too. I'm glad they're toughening up the schedule, because a lot of people have been complaining about that for years. So it looks like they're finally doing something about it.
Mm-hmm. Good job.
Yeah. Hey, Terry, I want to thank you for joining us. Always a pleasure having you, my friend. And we'll have you back on again real soon and talk some more football, maybe even some more spring football. Who knows?
Yeah, I can't wait. Maybe I'll pop up there for a little spell.
Okie dokie. Hey, we'll see you later. Yep.
Okay,
bye-bye. Yep, and that's Terry Foster from the Detroit News, talking sports and talking a little bit of football with us right here on AM 870. It's 22 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
3 days and one fundamental question at the Supreme Court this week. Is the Affordable Care Act constitutional? The justices heard 5.5 hours of oral arguments in the High Court's biggest case in decades. I'm Neil Conan. Two lawyers who've argued before the court help us read between the lines at the Supreme Court. Plus, Loving the Bus, next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon. I'm Scott Pohl with a look at the weather. The high today, 50 degrees and mostly sunny today. Tonight, there's a chance we'll get some light snow, sleet, and rain with a low of 35. A cool day Friday, the high 42, rain likely tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 51 Saturday.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR in East Lansing. If you've never called us before, we invite you to come on and join us. Be a part of the fun right here on AM 870. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here anytime, Monday through Friday between 105 and 2 o'clock. Remember, you can also check us out on Facebook. You can also check us out on Twitter. You can also listen to the program online. You can do that as well. There's a lot of ways for you to stay in touch with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. We're going to also give you some thoughts on Michigan State spring football. I had a chance to talk a lot with Mark D'Antonio the other day, and we'll bring you some of his cuts and comments and some of the things he said about spring football. But right now we're trying to get a hold of Dave Gericke and talk some women's basketball and also some men's basketball and some high school sports with Dave right here on AM 870. Dave and I were at the boys' high school finals together and also at the girls' finals. So we'll chat a little bit with Dave on recently on some of the events surrounding boys' basketball. But you can call us up and share us and give us your thoughts right here on AM 870. WKAR. Well, let's look a little bit at the upcoming college guys. And one guy who's going to make probably a pretty big impression on Michigan State is DeAnthony Arnett, who played his first year at Tennessee. And he's promising, he's petitioning the school, Michigan State, to get so he can be immediately eligible. So we'll ask, Mark D'Antonio about DeAnthony Arnett. And yes, we're getting him up, and then we'll be joined by Dave Gorecki with us, and we'll chat with Dave as well. So let's go to Dave right now. We'll get D'Anthony Arnett on a little later. Dave, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing real well. How about you, Earl?
Hey, doing good. It's a pleasure to talk with you. You know, we haven't had a chance to get you on recently, so I'm really glad to get you on. And we got to talk a little bit about some of the women's games going on. One thing I've noticed, Dave, especially, it seems like in girls' basketball or women's basketball, that the young women are getting a lot more skilled over the past about 5 to 10 years. They're really getting skilled now. Do you see that girls and women are just getting better and better as players, or their skill level is getting higher?
Oh, definitely their skill, because they're playing so much AAU basketball and everything like that. And I think that's probably pretty much why, you know, it's going really well with them, without a doubt.
Yes, and it's helping the colleges, because you see better girls going into college now.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, just a couple weeks ago, we were in Breslin watching the state tournament, and you could tell how good the quality of play was there. I mean, it was just pretty remarkable. I mean, Madison Rostrowski, you look at her over at Grosse Pointe Liggett, you know, and you see the type of ball handler that she is. And, of course, AG, who's going to go to Michigan State from Detroit Gas Tech. And, you know, obviously they got Ariel Powers from Country Day, a great player. So Michigan State and Susie is going to have a lot of great players. And, you know, they play year-round, and they play AAU ball, and they're really prepared by the time they get to college.
Yes, that's really impressive, because over the years, it seemed like it took the girls had to grow a lot by the time they get to college, and they have a lot more growing to do. Yes, there still is growth, but it doesn't seem to be as large as it used to be.
Exactly, and they're physically stronger. I think they really get in the conditioning and the weight training program and things like that. So they're really more prepared. I mean, you know, Hines, of course, that was a freshman there this year, for instance, you know, she was physically strong and ready to go. And for Michigan State program, they're going to be a very, very good team, especially if Madison can come back from her, you know, consecutive knee injuries, which we hope will happen.
Yes, and you know, with a lot of these schools changing, I wonder if it's – I know we always look at it, how it affects boys' teams moving up and down in high school. How do you think it's going to affect some of these girls' teams that have been moved up and down in classes?
Well, I'm not really sure. Like, Kalkaska, I think, has moved up from Class C to Class B. But there's not really a tremendous amount of movement that I just, with a first glance took a notice of. So I think they're pretty much going to be about the same. I really do. I don't think that the powers to be, you know what I mean, when you're talking about the teams that can battle for a state championship, I don't think that movement's going to be there.
Yes. Seeing on the boys' side, seeing the Detroit Pershing moving down to Class B, they'll be in there with Lansing Sexton. Now, that could be
and the same thing with the girls. I think for the girls' side, I think that would have been a tremendous move for them this year. You know what I'm saying? Because they ran into a very good Detroit King team that beat them in the PSL. We're talking the girls' side here, and I think that if Pershing would have been on the Class B side this year, I think it would have been a big difference.
Oh, yes, that's for sure. And, you know, we see this movement. We see so many of the schools in the outlying areas are getting larger, where the city schools are getting smaller now. We're seeing a trend to the more of the suburban schools getting larger, and the city schools now just seem to be getting smaller.
Why do you think that is, Earl?
Well, I know the movement, a lot of movement, of course. A lot of people are moving, moving out of state or out of the area. And so that I've seen, even around here, I see some of the schools in outlying areas getting larger, like the Holtz, Grand Ledges, Okemos. Mm-hmm. They're getting us larger as well. So we're just seeing so much movement, and many people people want to give their kids the best chance, and many of them believe that they can get a better chance in the suburban schools. I don't know if that's true or not, but I know certainly a lot of people do believe that.
Are we talking here in education, or are we talking in athletics? What do you think there?
Well, in athletics, Some people think that they'll get more opportunity at the smaller schools. The competition is as tough as it is in the city schools. You know, the competition is really tough there. So a lot of kids will move out, or the parents will move out thinking they'll have a better chance at starting and playing at the schools in the suburbs.
You know, I think there's a lot of truth to that because, you know, where I am in the Ypsilanti School District, a lot of the Ypsilanti-Lincoln kids are moving over to the Milan side, and Milan has grown incredibly big. So I think you're right in that situation. And where I used to be a sports editor 25 years ago in Coldwater, I've noticed that they're a Class A school now, which is incredible, come to think about it, because 25 years ago they were Class B, and it was, you know, a solid Class B school. So it's interesting to see some of these areas really develop and how they move over there.
It is. It's quite surprising on some of them how things have changed over, like you say, over the last 20-25 years. Things have almost totally changed, hasn't it?
Yeah, they definitely have, without a doubt. And of course, like you just said about the girls basketball and stuff like that, it's night and day in a matter of 25 years.
Yes, and the thing with the girls, though, there's so much improvement. It's amazing how it doesn't matter whether it's city schools or suburban schools. Girls basketball, just in general, has just gotten so much better.
And I wish that they could change some stuff in the NCAA tournament, because if you watch, like I did, some of the Notre Dame game against Maryland the other night, you know, Notre Dame was just beating up on them, but the crowd was so small. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And this is a regional championship game, and you're just thinking, you know, it's so bad that it's too bad that they can't find a way to still get it on campus sites. I know, you know, that some of them are, obviously, like when Michigan State played, they played at Maryland. But, I mean, you really like to see the attendance and to see that, they deserve these big rewards for making the NCAA tournament. You would hope that they could play in, you know, front of larger crowds, 7,000, maybe 12,000, you know, sites, or maybe do it like they did with the regional, you know, the first and second round games at Bowling Green, because when you're in a 5,000 or 6,000 seat arena, it gets jam packed, and then it becomes a much better atmosphere. You know what I mean?
Oh, yes.
We know that the Final Four will be sold out because that just happens, but it's just a shame to see some of these other teams like that.
Yes, I mean, I look at a team, and this is funny about women's basketball. You look at a team that's really come out of nowhere in the last couple of years is Baylor, and I know a lot of people are already saying, how can anyone beat Baylor? I mean, Griner, the center, she's so good. She changes so many shots. You can't go inside. She even goes outside to try to block some shots. But she's such a dominant factor in the paint. It's going to be hard for anybody to beat Baylor, isn't it?
Well, it will be. But, you know, someone did last year, and that was the shock. You know what I mean? It's almost like if they can get her in foul trouble, you know, then it's a whole different story, because it's a whole different animal with them. But you're right. If she's on the floor and she's doing it at the top of her game, I can't see anybody. But, I mean, there's no better Final Four than what they have right now. I mean, you know, Stanford, and obviously Notre Dame and UConn and Baylor. I mean, that should be a good one.
Yes, it should.
It really should be. And, of course, we saw what Sison do, right? We were at the girls' state finals, and Grand Haven had the 6'5 kid, the Abby Cole, and she just completely changed that game. I mean, it's unbelievable, because I think she blocked four or five shots in the first quarter alone in the state title game. And then it makes the other team even think when they go in the lane. I mean, they change their shot.
Right.
You know what I mean? So even if it's not blocked, you know, the shot's still not going to go in the hoop.
Yes, and that thing, you can change it. You have to adjust so much if you have an outstanding center, especially on the women's side, because you know we had the one Alyssa DeHaan a few years ago. She changed shots, but she was so thin. But she changed a lot of shots. But you know, she didn't have a strong offensive game.
No, she did not have a strong offensive game at all, and that's kind of even things out a little bit, you know what I mean? Because she changed games at one end of the court, but she really wasn't that much of a presence on the other. And I think Madison Williams, if she gets healthy, I think she will be, you know what I mean?
Yes.
I think she's more of a force, an offensive force. And that's the same thing with this kid at Grand Haven. She showed that she really, really has an offensive game and doesn't mind going really, really aggressively to the hoop on the offensive end.
And yes, that's going to be a big question mark with Madison Williams. Missing 2 years, how far does she come back? How much does she come back after missing two whole years?
I know, but luckily she can see on the men's side the Hummel kid at Purdue, mm-hmm. Saudi Washington, who played at Western Michigan some, 14, 15 years ago, who's now the assistant coach at Oakland. Of course, everybody knows him from his days in Lansing. So, at least she has a couple of players that she can look back on and say, they came back and had tremendous careers. So that's a possibility.
Yes, it's a possibility, and we'll keep our fingers crossed for her. Hopefully she can come back and be the player that everyone thought she could be, or especially the player she thought she could be. It looks like she's got the potential to be a very dominant player, so we'll just have to wait and see.
And you're right. It's almost getting past the emotional, the mental part now at this stage. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's like you're waiting, am I going to get hurt? But if she can ever get past that point, she's going to be healthy because when she comes back, she's going to be twice as strong, at least you would think, through all the rehab that she's going to be doing.
That's the thing, Dave. Especially it seems like there are more ACLs in women's basketball. When you look at it overall, it just seems like there's more ACLs, more leg injuries in training camps and things in women's basketball. Do you see it like that more?
There is. And they've done studies over time, and there is, it just definitely is, and and it's really too bad, but seems like they get through it just like the men's side do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The warrior type kids that just love the game, they find a way to get back, and somehow, some of them just end up having really good careers when they do finally come back.
Yeah, yes, Dave. That's one thing I wonder about. Do we spend too much, the kids especially, do they spend too much time playing basketball? Would it be better, some coaches have said, that they play other sports, be more well-rounded athletes instead of a lot of kids just play basketball or just play football or baseball?
Yeah, I think that it's a great thing that they do, and there's a number of them that do. I just did a story on Tom Anastas' daughter, who really, really good basketball player over at Livonia Ladywood, and she plays hockey, and they just won the national title last year, and they're going to be playing in the national championship tournament, I think next week or something, in Boston. And she's, one of those type players that plays multiple sports, and there are other ones. I'm doing a story for the spring sports preview on a kid named Brianna Combs that is a pitcher. And she played basketball, and yet she is one of the top softball pitchers, in the state, well, possibly the country. She's one of those Gatorade, player of the year type players. So there are, definitely multi-sports players out there, and I think it's a very good thing because you can get burned out too, don't you think, by playing one sport year-round?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Especially when you're really trying to win for your high school season, and then you go into the AAU program, which means so much to a lot of kids, and there's a lot of money involved in that and everything that goes on with that. So, yeah, I think it's a great thing to play more than one sport, and there's a lot of them that even play three.
Yes, because the thing about with kids that just play one sport, a lot of them just get so disenchanted with the sport and they quit and then they don't come back. We see a lot of that where the kids say, heck with this, I'm not putting up, I'm not doing all this stuff for this coach or this school or anything, and they just give up on that and that one sport. They may love it, but a lot of times they'll just give up the whole thing.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, there was this one player I remember that played high school, in your neck of the woods over at Oakmont, I think it was Jennifer Smith Dewey. And if I'm not mistaken with that name, it seems to be quite a while ago, I don't know, 5-10 years ago. She was an outstanding player. And I think she had a scholarship somewhere. And right when she was done playing, I think she just said that she didn't want to play anymore. And she probably just got tired of it and wanted to go to college and have the normal college life, and go after a degree and everything after that. And that's why it's good to play multiple sports or take a nice break, You know what I mean?
So for sure.
You're good. But let me tell you, she was outstanding. I'm not sure if they won the state title or not, but they, I'm sure that they were right there in the Final Four that year when she played.
Okay. Hey, Dave, I want to thank you for being with us. Always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. We'll have you back on again and talk some more high school sports and prep sports and other sports. I know you cover everything, so we'll have you back on and cover some of the other things you cover.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me, Earl. I appreciate it, okay. Just like always.
Okay, thank you, Dave.
Yep. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's Dave Gericke from the Detroit News talking sports with us right here on AM 870. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870. WKAR.
Certain immediate doom. Fletcher Wortman felt it everywhere and, overtaken by his obsessive-compulsive disorder, devised elaborate rituals to save himself. Never close that book, maybe. Flip the lights on and off 3 times. Count every tile on the floor repeatedly. I'm Neil Conan, a memoir of OCD triggered. Fletcher Wortman joins us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Today will be mostly sunny and the high will be near 50 degrees. Our overnight low, 35 tonight, and we could get some light snow, sleet, and rain tonight. Rain is likely tomorrow, and it'll be cooler with a high in the low 40s. Saturday, the high back up into the low 50s and mostly sunny. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, we're going to talk a little MSU football, and we had a chance to sit down with Coach Mark D'Antonio the other day. Actually, I think that was on Tuesday. We got a lot of things talked about. One of the things that he talked about with us was DeAnthony Arnett, who's transferring from Tennessee, and Michigan State has petitioned the NC2A for him to be eligible immediately. So this is what Mark D'Antonio had to say about DeAnthony Arnett.
Well, DeAnthony Arnett comes, after a very successful freshman year at the University of Tennessee. That petition has gone in, so we'll wait to see where the NCAA is on that, but you know, he's involved in winter conditioning. He's involved in spring practice. We will work him as if he's going to be game ready and should be a very exciting player based on his high school, based on how he ran around in winter conditioning. Very fluid athlete, very quick, explosive, and will pay us great dividends, I think, as a person and as a player as we move forward. I think it's important to recognize that without question, he came home because of a situation within his family, and hopefully the NCAA sees that and makes decisions based on that, but that's their decision, that's not ours, so we just petition it.
Okay, and one other thing Coach D'Antonio talked about, the goals for this upcoming season for many of the players.
We want to try and get 3% better every practice. I think that's something my head coach, my position coach really, talked about in spring practice going way back in the 1970s, and I think I still try and hold that to be true. So you're going to remain 90%, 7% of what you do will remain the same, but if you can just change that 3% every day, you're going to get become a more effective football player at the end. So that's what we're trying to do. Develop new concepts, new ideas, new position changes, experiment with those different things. We also obviously need to stay healthy, but guard against complacency, I would say, regardless of where we're at, whether you're the head coach here or position coach or a position player, you need to look forward to the next day and really guard, I think, in terms of against being complacent in everything that we do. We want to build for a championship and continue to develop confidence, develop experience, teach our young players, which is so critical, I think, at this time. We've got a lot of players who are redshirt freshmen. Should be tremendous players.
And I tell you, you wonder about, players that are trying to get better daily. I mean, you know, they see coaches saying each and every day, well, you practice so much for 12 football games. You spend so much time getting ready for these 12 games. Sometimes it's amazing to me that everybody keeps focused on winning these games and focused on football. You got 12 games, and you've got to do a ton of work for those 12 football games. Right now, let's go to the phones. We've got Dennis on the line. Dennis, how you doing?
Good, Earl. How you doing?
Okay.
Hey, I wanted to catch up with you on a couple things. One, high school basketball, and two, boxing. And then you can get back to your Michigan State stuff. You know, earlier this week, I saw where Markowski and Mitch McKay both entered into the debate about where Lansing Sexton ranked against all-time high school teams, both Class B and A.
Right.
And to me, Earl, that was the wrong way to approach it. I know that, you know, people always want to have those type of arguments. I'm not saying you shouldn't debate that. But to me, it was more of an aesthetic. It was more about how they played the game. It wasn't how many, you know, Division I prospects they have on the team or how many All-Staters or who's going to be a long-term pro prospect, any of that. It's just how Sexton shared the ball, how they shot the ball, how they played the game with so much intensity on defense and offense, and how they really had no weakness. That's what I look at when I look at Sexton, and that's where I say I just can't think of teams that really compare to them. I know there's teams out there who had maybe even more talent than Sexton, if you look at some of the great teams that both those writers listed and what you and I talked about the other day. But just as far as they played the game, Earl, they were an absolute pleasure to watch. And I can't think of another team I enjoyed more over the years. Can you?
No, that's clearly one of the best teams ever out of the mid-Michigan area. I put that question up for that Markowski and McKay were debating on. I'd asked the question. I asked the question to Brent Forbes. You know, did that make with Michigan with Sexton getting to three straight Final Fours, did that make them one of the best teams ever out of the state of Michigan? And of course, he said he did, and then the other players jumped in and said they thought they were one of the best ever in the state of Michigan. And then the writers, they had their opinions on it. So you read everything.
yeah, it's true. Just to go to boxing real quick, you know, just want to say reluctant goodbye to Bert Sugar. Really going to miss his writing and his contributions to the sport of boxing, his interviews, the documentaries. I really appreciate you having him. You had him on the show over the years, and you know, it's not every day you get to talk to an authority in sports like that. So thanks to you, and may he rest in peace. He was a great guy. If you ever want to hear a real good tribute to him, go online and look at Keith Olbermann, who's one of my favorite political commentators. He had a personal relationship with Bert Sugar going back to his teenage years, and it was really interesting, really compelling, and if you want to watch something interesting, just go online and YouTube that, and I think you'll like it, Earl.
Okie doke. Hey.
Real quick, Zeb Judah, I don't know if you saw him Saturday night.
I didn't see much of that, but I saw he did win it, so yeah, I did catch a little bit of that.
Earl, that guy, he looked, again, he looked like a champion. I've never seen anyone like him in history. One fight, he can look like Sugar Ray Robinson, and next he can just look like Sugar. I don't get that guy, but he looked good. And that Kirkland fight, that was one of the worst stoppages. In fact, it may be the worst stoppages I've ever seen. I don't understand what that ref is doing. There's the rules, and then there's what's really going on, and I think he totally blew that one.
Yeah, he did. Because Dave Mayo and I talked about that, and
I heard that.
Yeah, he just went along to the letter of the ruling and just let it lie. He, you know, there is always there. You know, you can give a break, make some mistakes, but he just thought he had to follow it to the letter of the law, which we disagreed with, but that was his calling. He just said, hey, that's the way the rule is written, and I'm going to enforce it that way.
And he caused the confusion. That's what's ironic about it. It was his lack of clarity and decisiveness that caused the corner man to step into the ring. He didn't know if it was the end of the round or there'd been a knockdown called or what. It was, man, that was, and I'm a Franklin fan, but the guy was losing, and I hate to see him win that way.
Yeah.
All right, Earl, I'll let you go, man.
Okay. Hey, thank you, Dennis. And let's see. We've got Ken on the, let me see who we got here. Both. Okay. Well, let's see. We can go back to the cuts again. We've got let's go back to Tony Lepette. He's a receiver. He played a lot more defense last year. But this year, Coach D'Antonio say Tony Lepette will play just about mostly offense.
Tony will go exclusively to offense. I think he's a guy that, you know, we moved over there on the defensive side of the ball, really along with Langford last year, just because we felt like we had depth in those positions and they were two good athletes just to stand there and watch. Both those guys will be able to come over and play on defense in an emergency situation, but both of those guys work exclusively on the offensive side of the ball, and Langford may see a little bit of time out there, wide receiver as well. But he's an outstanding athlete. Both those guys are very good athletes and catch the ball very, very well and good run after catch.
And also, he talked about the quarterbacks, of course, Andrew Maxwell and Connor Cook, the two quarterbacks. And here's what Coach D'Antonio had to say about the Michigan State's two of their top quarterbacks.
I think our football team right now, when you look at it, we've got a blend of experience coming back, but we also have youth. And so when you look at our football team, if you want to look at it basically position by position, you've got a quarterback situation where we've got a guy who will be a fourth-year player for us. He'll be a redshirt junior, and Andrew Maxwell and Connor Cook, a redshirt freshman. But a lot of experience coming back in terms of he's been in the system. He's game ready. What he hasn't been able to do right now, I think, is be in front of a media situation as much, be in front of a live situation as much. But he's gotten the reps, and I think he'll be an outstanding quarterback. Connor Cook as well.
And also, he also talked about the offensive line. They've got a lot of offensive linemen returning. It should be one of the strongest units on the team.
Offensive line, more experience than we've ever had before. Seven starters back, tight end. Deion Sims is back again, and we've got to find some answers there at the second, third, fourth guys. We play a lot of different tight ends. Our tailback situation is solid. Le'Veon Bell is back along with Larry Caper in his fourth season, and then Nick Hill now in his second. I think Jeremy Langford is a guy that has had an outstanding winter conditioning and looks poised going into his third year to be a real factor, I think, on this football team. Wide receiver position obviously is a position that we've lost a lot of players. When you really look at the guys we've lost, you know, we have the majority maybe or two-thirds of what we've got from our running attack back, but our wide receiver position and the yards and the catches really has been sort of depleted in that area, whether it's tight end with Lithicum or whether it's Keyshawn Martin and certainly B.J. Cunningham and Keith Nichol. So we're looking to replace those guys also, obviously, and so that's a position where we've addressed those needs in recruiting, and we're addressing those needs with position moves maybe or different situations we're trying to deal with.
Well, we also let's go back to the phones, and we've got a call from Ken on the line. Ken, how you doing? Hey, Ken.
Hey, Earl, how are you?
Okay.
Earl, I'm a 1973 graduate of Michigan State. I ran track and cross country there.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to hopefully have you help us get the word out on a track and cross-country reunion we're having next weekend at Michigan State University.
Oh, okay.
We're kind of honoring the 71-72 Triple Crown track and cross-country team. Those teams won the Big Ten championship in cross-country indoors and outdoors and were second in the NCAA championship. And Herb Washington and Marshall Bill and Bill Weirwine and I are all kind of planning a reunion to get the track and cross country guys back on campus for the home track meet and reconnect after 40-some years of heart and pride in track and field.
Oh, that should be great. That should be a lot of fun. You know, I know a lot of those guys because I was around then. That was when I first got here. So I've always been a lover of track and field, so that's great.
Well, that's what I remember. And if you're out and about on Saturday and can come by to the meet, we'd love to see you. And Friday night, we're having an informal get-together at the Hall of Fame restaurant and cafe over in Lansing. But we've got about 30 alumni coming there. Herb, Marshall, and I will all be there. And as well as Bill Weirwine, Daz Campbell, who was a noted high school coach and Michigan State grad. And we'd love to see you if you had a minute to stop by and see us.
Oh, yeah. I'll do that. I'll try to make a cap. I better write that down right now because I'll forget if I don't write it down.
Yeah.
We all get to that point.
Yeah, it'll be next Friday at 6 o'clock at
next
the Hall
Friday.
Of Fame Lounge. We're going until about 10. Coach Jim Phipps is going to be there. He's the one coach surviving who coached us all back in the early 70s. But he's alive and in good health, and he's coming over, and we're going to have quite a celebration. We'd love to have you join us.
Oh, hey, sounds good, my friend. Hey.
All right, hey. Earl, you take care and appreciate your Spartan pride, my friend.
Okay, thank you, Ken. Hey, we appreciate that call. Yeah, and we'll look forward. That's the track and field reunion, 1971-72 team, and boy, they were really, really good. I mean, you talk about good. They were really good in the sport of track and field. 71-72 reunion, the Hall of Fame Cafe next Friday, 6 o'clock. So hopefully you'll all be there. Well, let's see. We have another comment from Coach D'Antonio on this one on the star unit, which is the linebacker unit, which is one of the strongest units on the team.
Well, I think he was much like Chris Norman is as a freshman. You know, he was on the field in special teams. He played a little bit. We tried to find a place for him, but there was a lot to learn. And I think Tawan will be an outstanding player for us here, and I think he'll compete for playing time. He's going to have a tremendous spring. When he pulls the pin, he's got as much snap and as much power and explosiveness as any linebacker out there. He's big. He's quick. But he has to learn to play fast at all times. He can't second-guess himself. And that's part of experience, and, you know, that's what spring is for. But if you look at it, he'll probably have another 1,000 snaps sometime this spring. We're a little different than most. Some people rush through their spring and get it over with. We take our time, and we'll go, you know, 5 weeks with this. So there's going to be a lot of practice. Evaluation of the practice, evaluation of the practice. So there's going to be a lot of reps and a lot of situations that he's going to see, as well as our other guys. But with Chris Normus out, he'll have his opportunity to play at the number one. Darian Harris is another guy that very active player. And then Ed Davis is another very instinctive young player. And then you've got the other guys who've been there, and I think you guys know those guys' names.
And then we have one final one as we look at overall. Coach D'Antonio looked at they brought in at least 5 receivers, so he's looking at how the receiving unit will fare.
You know, we addressed the depth by recruiting 5 players, really 6 because I think we've got a 6 or 7 because I think we've got a couple guys who could go play wide receiver. A couple defensive backs were wide receivers in high school. Really, 1, 2, 3, 4 of them, 3 of them were. And then a tailback could also maybe move into that position, and Nick Tompkins. We've recruited 5 guys. And then with that being said, we've got guys here, I think, that can be game ready as well. We've got to get Caesar back healthy. You know, he should be on a limited basis out there. He's probably 80% right now with his foot. So it'd be exciting to watch how he transitions through the spring. Benny Fowler, we've got to get back. I mean, he's a guy who played for us a lot in 2010, very good player. Arnett's situation is a little bit of an unknown. Tony Lippett should be a very good player. I think Keith Mumphrey is a guy that's ready to explode onto the scene. We've got a guy by John Jakubik who's a walk-on who's shown some different things. A.J. Sims is a guy we redshirted last year, very exciting player, can get north-south very quick. So we've got guys, but we don't have the experience and the catches in games that these other guys who have left us have. And all 3 of those guys, you know, along with Lithicum and Selick, really those guys are all in the hunt to play at the next level. So we're going to miss those guys. It's going to be important to work extremely hard. It's going to be important for our guys to work on their own after spring ball, you know, throughout the summer and then also in August. And, you know, those first couple games in the fall camp are going to be important for them to get game experience as well.
Well, that's a lot of the information about Michigan State's football team. We'll be back tomorrow and tell you more about what's going on tomorrow. Sorry we couldn't get to all the callers. Some of the callers wanted to wait and listen to all the cuts we had. So we call us back tomorrow and talk sports with us right here on AM 870. And we want to thank you all for listening today. Thank you all for calling. We certainly invite you to come back tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. So we want you to make sure you have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening. And I'll look forward to hearing you tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening. I'll see you tomorrow right here on WKAR.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.